Chapter 28, Jenny and the Nazi. One of the world's most famous lies was told on 28th January 1998, when then US President Bill Clinton told the world, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman." That woman was Monica Lewinsky, who fell for Clinton's lethal charm when she was a White House intern in 1995. At first, Lewinsky denied the affair, signing an affidavit to that effect, but she confessed when it emerged that her friend, Linda Tripp, a Pentagon staffer, had recorded conversations with a hidden microphone provided by the FBI. A decade earlier, events surrounding a similar lie in South Africa took shape when the country's most gossiped-about gossip columnist, Jenny Allen, published her most controversial column. It appeared in the Sunday Times on 31st January 1988, which coincidentally was the birthday of its subject, Eugene Terreblanche. Terreblanche was the leader of the fanatical right-wing Afrikaner Weerstandsbeweging, AVB. At the time, the AVB had not yet been exposed as a bunch of brandy and coke buffoons. In 1988, they paraded with their wannabe swastika flags and armbands and their heavily armed Eistergarde. Their members ranted about blood and war and were implicated in beating and killing black people. In those days, they were ominous, sinister, and something to fear. After submitting the interview, Allen was eating a peach when Sunday Times editor Tertius Myberg thundered into the newsroom. "This is vintage Allen," he roared at the sub-editor. "Don't change a word." The column changed her life. Allen was not only the newspaper's star, millions of people read her every week. She was a former model and a celebrity in her own right. The Palace, a stylish Johannesburg restaurant where she and the It crowd drank Dom Perignon most nights, named a salad after her. And the trendy band Juist Tontelduis in die Dwarstrekkers sang a version of Wild Thing with the lyric, "Jenny Allen, ek wil jou bespring." She had also been voted South Africa's most admired person in a Gallup poll in 1987. Allen could make or break people in her celebrated column, so liberal Sunday Times readers would have opened the paper on 31st January 1988 expecting to read a hatchet job on a bitter right-winger who had a habit of falling off his horse. Instead, they were greeted by several hundred words of fellatio. Allen wrote that Terreblanche doesn't walk into a room, he takes occupation of it. Things shrink. She called him a hunk with impeccable manners and wrote that his composure was as cool as a slice of melktert. She described his rich, earth-brown voice. Sometimes it has the loamy texture of a newly ploughed mealyfield. Sometimes it's a caress of worn corduroy. She ended by saying she had to remind herself to breathe because, and her next sentence would haunt her for the rest of her life, "I'm impaled on the blue flames of his blowtorch eyes, you see." Most South Africans didn't see. What they did see, though, was that Allen had fallen for Terreblanche's lethal charm. The E.T. Allen saga soon became a matter of national obsession, as rumors circulated that the couple were doing some mealyfield ploughing of their own. The romance was all but confirmed in December, when police were called to investigate a break-in at the Paardekraal monument in Krugersdorp and found Terreblanche parked inside with Allen. He had rammed the gate open with his BMW. Terreblanche's image as a devout family man took a knock. And although she denied the affair, Allen lost her column. She says she was placed on a right-wing hit list and her flat was bombed. In 1989, she fled to London, where her glamorous life screeched to a halt. However, her luck changed when she was awarded £40,000 in out-of-court settlements from the Evening Standard and Options magazine over suggestive remarks about her association with the AVB leader. So when Channel 4's The Leader, His Driver, and The Driver's Wife alluded to their relationship, Allen tried to cash in again. But this time, there was no settlement offer. Instead, the TV station hired George Carman QC, regarded in Britain as the most feared courtroom barrister of his generation, and the libel case of the year began. What followed was sordid testimony from Alan's former friend and flatmate, Linda Shaw, about how she peered through the keyhole of Alan's bedroom door and saw her having sex with Terre Blanche. She identified the RV beer leader by his fleshy bottom, which is probably the most reliable method of recognizing a prize ass. It was a large bottom, she told the court. It was on top of Jenny, rising up and down. I assume they were having sex. RVA Beer Secretary General Kays Smit testified that when he arrived to fetch a drunk Terre Blanche from Alan's flat, he found him in a pair of holy green underpants. The RVA Beer leader sent an affidavit denying the tryst. Unlike the Lewinsky case, there was no dress that could be forensically examined. But there was Alan's diary, which mysteriously landed in Carmen's hands and was filled with explicit descriptions of a supposed relationship with a married Italian airline pilot. Alan had said she would never have an affair with a married man, so the diary was devastating to her case. The court also heard damning recordings of Terre Blanche's drunken declarations of love on Alan's answering machine. Oh, call me back, darlingy, please, please. Alan lost the case. The court concluded that she hadn't been libeled and saddled her with Channel 4's £300,000 legal costs. She didn't pay. It was my moral duty not to pay, she insisted, and fled to Cape Town, where she secured a spot on a regional radio station as a talk show host. But South Africa couldn't forget or forgive her liaison with the Ventersdorp Führer, or Rambur, as she dubbed him. I'm like the Voortrekker Monument. Everyone knows I'm there, but no one wants to visit, she said, deciding to escape South Africa in 2001. She left her country, her career, and even her identity, and washed up in America, where she called herself Juliet, so people couldn't find her on Google. She worked as a waitress in Lambertville, a small town in New Jersey. She said it was like living in a Norman Rockwell painting. Alan returned home in 2015 for a two-week taste of her old fame to promote her memoir, Jenny Confidential, then returned to Lambertville to live in a blaze of obscurity. The former most admired South African was diagnosed with an aggressive form of cancer and died in a Philadelphia hospice on 25th July 2023.